Hey, this is Jason Murchie, and you're listening to World Talk Radio. The show is Ethics from Living Room to Boardroom. We're discussing moral theory. Ethics is the study of morality, and that is our subject here in this third segment. I hope you listened to the first two. If so, I guess you're excited to see what comes next. I'm going to leave you with a quote from Thomas Jefferson. He says, "The moral sense is as much a part of our constitution as that of feeling, seeing, or hearing." Stay with me. There's more to come.
Do you dream of owning your own business? Franchising may hold the key. Invest in a proven business with proven results. Not sure where to start? Franchise Solutions can help. Franchise Solutions has helped thousands of entrepreneurs find a business to fit their goals and dreams. Find information on hundreds of franchise and business opportunities, as well as tips, advice, and tons of franchise-related resources. Franchise Solutions. Find the business that's right for you. Visit us online today at www.franchisesolutions.com.
Come on, dear. It's time to go.
It's 4 o'clock in the morning.
I know. Isn't it great? The early bird gets the worm. I don't want to be late. I hear the fish are really biting. I've got the Jeep all packed.
This man suffers from extreme excitement because he just bought a new Jeep from Carl Berger's Jeep World in La Mesa.
I can smell it already.
Smell? Nobody smells at 4 in the morning.
This man does, because he can't wait to ride in his new Jeep from Carl Berger's Jeep World. Jeep versatility all wrapped up in leather.
Come on, dear, up and at 'em.
Give it a rest, dear. We're only going antique shopping. The store's not even open.
You, too, could suffer extreme excitability. See the world of difference at Carl Berger's Jeep World. Low prices, great selection, and 5-star customer service. Save time by shopping online. Online at carlberger.com.
Let's go! Let's go!
It's a world of difference. Carl Berger.
Carl Berger's Jeep World. Get excited today. Carl Berger's Jeep World. I-8 at Jackson Drive, La Mesa.
Listen. The world is talking. World Talk Radio.
To speak with our show hosts or guests during the live show, call us toll-free in North America, 888-514-2100. Everywhere else, call 001-858-268-3068.
Hi, Jason Murchie is my name. I'm glad that you're still here. I left you with a Thomas Jefferson quote right before the break, and I found another interesting quote about Thomas Jefferson that I think I'd like to ask Peter a question about. This is by Paul Finkelman. He says, "During Thomas Jefferson's long life, of hundreds of different slaves he owned, he freed only 3, and 5 more at his death, all blood relatives of his." Can you get your mind around that, Dr. Rabe?
Wow.
He held hundreds of slaves. He only freed 3 when he was living, and then he freed 5 more when he died, and they were all his blood relatives.
Because they were family, yeah.
So I think that raises an interesting point that, on the one hand, he makes a beautiful quotation about how significant morality is. It's as important to us as our seeing, and yet not only did he own slaves, but it seems as though he didn't care too much about them. So,
yeah.
Can you talk about...
This is a really interesting quote that you just read and talked about. It leads wonderfully into the next one that I was going to talk about, which is justice is fairness. There's an American philosopher called John Rawls, and he said, how would you decide, like, for example, Thomas Jefferson's situation, how would you decide in a situation like that whether what he did was moral or not? And John Rawls basically said, look, put yourself behind a curtain of ignorance, he called it. Now, it's hard to do, but just imagine, you know, try at least.
It's not actually. I always find myself behind a curtain of ignorance.
Okay.
I think I'm using that term differently than you are.
Yeah, I think so. What Rawls is talking about is saying to yourself, well, if I didn't know who I was in this situation, how would I decide? So, you know, there is Thomas Jefferson. He knows who he is, president, and he owns all these slaves and so on. But what if he didn't know who he was? How would he decide then about what to do with the slaves? And so, in other words, that's a way to become objective, to try and be objective. Now, it's really difficult to do on a real human level, but at least it's a way to approach a decision making.
Let me just ask you to tell me if I'm right about this.
Mm-hmm.
John Rawls, R-A-W-L-S, was thinking that a good way to make a decision in an impartial way about what to do is to put yourself behind a, quote, veil of ignorance, where you wouldn't know if you were going to be the slave or you were going to be the president. And so you'd have to ask yourself very carefully, do I really want slavery to exist? Do I really want to contribute to slavery? Because I might turn out to be a slave if the roles were reversed.
You're absolutely right.
Okay.
That's absolutely right. Yep. Yeah, and that, of course, that helps you make a decision that's going to be fair for everyone, because you're risking, when you come out from behind that curtain, ending up being a slave, right?
Yeah.
So it's an interesting mental exercise to try to make fair and objective decisions. It's hard to do in real life, but it's an interesting approach, yeah.
And is it also true that he was coming, I mean, I think when he was writing, it was like 1960 or 70 or whatever, and he was kind of making a comparison to this theory called utilitarianism, which sometimes does something that might turn out to be really great or fair for many, many people, but a couple people really have to take it. Well, that's going to be too colloquial of a phrase, but they have to end up getting the short stick.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Can you transition to utilitarianism and say something about that?
Absolutely. What utilitarianism says, look, it's okay to have slavery because most people are white and the majority, it goes back to the very first one I mentioned, majority rule sort of thing. The greatest happiness principle, that's what utilitarianism is. Where's the greatest happiness going to be? Well, that most people are white and they'll be happy even though slavery exists. The blacks are a minority, so that's okay. That seems to be a moral decision.
That's really interesting and abstract. It's as though you'd have to calculate how much the slaves back
right.
in, you know, antebellum South were suffering and
right.
how much the slave owners were calm and comfortable, and you'd have to kind of weigh that and say which is the more important thing.
And literally, you're talking about John Stuart Mill and Jeremy Bentham, who developed utilitarianism. They basically said, yeah, we should try and make these kind of calculations as to where, you know, how the most happiness will be produced. And like you said, the problem is, you know, your slaves can be suffering incredibly, and how can we count that in terms of weighing it against the white majority who are quite happy with their lot in life? It's a very difficult calculation to make, although it is a, you know, we tend to use utilitarianism a lot in real life where we say, well, what decision should I make that will make the most people happy in my club or my group or whatever? We tend to do that a lot.
I think the situation...
So it's not like it's a useless theory. It just has its weak points.
Yeah, I don't think it's useless either, but I do think it's worth pointing out that it gets stressed when subjected to a certain... or let's say when subjected to stress, it starts to break down. For
yeah.
example, with the Abu Ghraib prison scandal, as I understand it, and I think news is always coming out about this, but people that are higher up in the political realm say to the CIA or the military or the grunts there, you know, we need information from these people. You got to soften them up. You got to get them scared so that they're willing to cough up what they know. What they know is supposedly very valuable information about where the next hit is going to be that could involve thousands of American lives. And so if you need to torture that person, go for it, because something good is going to come of this. We might save thousands of American lives by only torturing one man. So is that a good way to show the dark underbelly of utilitarianism as a
yeah.
decision-making process?
Yeah, that's an excellent example. Yeah, because you're willing to do real harm to one person for possibility of harm to a lot of people. And again, that calculation is so difficult to make unless you've got, you know, the vision of God, so to speak, to actually see the future and what have you. Yeah, and yet, again, we do this on a daily basis. We use utilitarianism, not usually where it's so harmful to one individual for the good of many, as your example shows, but we do use it. But it's a risky decision-making strategy for sure, yeah.
It can be atrociously difficult to make a decision with utilitarianism because, you know, what if some supernatural being said to me, put me in a little dilemma and said, you know, there is a man who's in Abu Ghraib prison right now, and he does have information. And if you torture him, or if you consent to his torture, then you're going to get information that's going to prevent one person that you know from being killed. And then it becomes, just heavy in regard to what is more important, the idea of torturing or saving somebody that I know. And, yeah. And it can get even weirder. Like, let's say you don't know for sure if the person has information, but you think they might, then you might be torturing them for a reason that has no bearing. It's not actually as pivotal as you think.
Right. I mean, you could be wrong. I hear what you're saying.
Tough calls.
The other thing is that, and this has come out in all sorts of movies and so on that, that the popular media puts on TV and what have you, where what does it do to the person, to the torturer, the person who's inflicting the torture? The whole idea behind morality is to be a good person. That's what you're trying to do, to avoid harm to others. And when you have to make that decision to weigh the difference between harming one individual and trying to rescue a number of other individuals, and you go ahead and you say, I'm willing to harm one individual, what does it do to yourself as your
right.
own perception of morality, your own feeling about your own goodness and so on? That's a real, real difficult situation.
Yeah,
the trouble is that, unfortunately, there when we talk about prisoners of war, prisoners in time of perceived warfare and threat and so on, we get into other issues that come into play that most of us tend to forget, in that the stress and the strain on international relations is brought about sometimes by our own activity, by our own actions. In other words, sometimes a country's own foreign policy creates the terrorists, and so the decision then should I torture a terrorist to save my people? Well, why is the terrorist there in the first place? So moral decisions sometimes have to go back a little bit instead of in the immediate present to say, should I torture this person or not to save my people? To ask a question something like, why is this person a terrorist? What else could I have done or can I now do to save my people from terrorism rather than just from this individual who I'm prepared to torture?
That's really deep. I could tell you're a philosopher coming up with that perspective,
hey,
Peter.
I get paid for this,
You've got an interesting job, and obviously you're well suited for it because
thank you.
You're slicing it really thin there, and it's very interesting. I mean, really thin. I like it though. Well, we probably have time to begin to get into another theory. Is there a theory we can get into
sure.
and get out of within?
There's one that connects very well with what we've just been talking about, and that's virtue ethics. And it's so simple and yet so difficult. This is one that Aristotle made popular thousands of years ago. And virtue ethics basically says, what would a good person do in this situation? And his, people usually say, my gosh, how would I be able to determine that? Well, I mean, are you considering yourself not a good person when you say, how would I figure this out, right? So most of us can start from the assumption that, hey, we're good people. But what Aristotle says basically is, being moral doesn't start here and now at my age, trying to decide what I should do in this situation. That's not what morality is all about, according to Aristotle. He said, morality begins at the cradle. When you produce a child, start teaching that child from the moment they can understand you by your behavior, and of course then later by what you say and what you teach them, to be good people. Then, Aristotle says, when a situation comes up, they're not going to have to stand there and calculate what to do, which is the utilitarian approach. How do I calculate what's the right thing to do? Aristotle says, if that child has been raised properly, when they're an adult, the right decision will just happen. It will just occur. They will be a good person in the decision they make. They won't have to stop and make this complicated calculation.
I gotcha. Well, that's an interesting idea, and I think a lot of us do say to ourselves, what's a good person likely to do? And if I'm an honorable person, what should I do in this case? And
right.
It's very apropos of something like character education, which we don't do a wonderful job of in America, which is basically teaching children how to make moral decisions and to do the right thing.
Yeah, we don't do that a lot here in Canada either, unfortunately.
Okay. I've got to bring some sad news, and that is that we are out of time. We've spent all the time we have on this particular program looking at moral theory, but there are so many more theories that are interesting, and on valuesofthewise.com, let's say in April, there is an opportunity to go ahead and do a little an inventory, a little assessment, where you get an opportunity to see what theory you like and to hear some things about it. I'm proud to say that that's something that you and I developed, and I think it's going to be helpful to a person who was interested in this show to go ahead and take that. So go to valuesofthewise.com. You can read more about Peter Rabe. You can take the ethics assessment, and you can check out my new book, Building a Life of Value. Thanks for tuning in, sticking with me for one, two, or three of these segments. Hope you enjoyed yourself. I did too. Moral theory is such an interesting topic. Tune in next time to Ethics from Living Room to Boardroom on World Talk Radio.